everybody, you're listening to Radio Free Nintendo, and I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and on this episode, I'm joined by Jonathan Metz.
Hello!
Thanks, Johnny, for taking up hosting duties last time. Sorry I couldn't be
you're
there.
You're most welcome.
And back from his brief vacation, Mike Slins.
Yep, I'm back from Disney World.
Yep, and he is still feeling bad about missing out on that iPhone price cut.
No, I'm getting my $100 back. I'm getting $100. You know what? I can't say I'm not happy. It's $100 fucking dollars.
Explicit.
Explicit.
Beep that.
Well, I'm not going to bleep that.
You should. Anyway, you should bleep it.
Nah,
you should bleep things okay. Even if they're not cuss words.
Then everyone think we're really cool.
Yeah. Just bleep every other word, then we'll be edgy. So yeah, we're back from last week's tech problems where we actually had to cut out the first segment because, well, we've already been explicit. Shit went awry.
Shit went down.
Shit went down. There was trouble down at the FSU campus. I know, I've left, like, a message with telecommunications. They called me back, they're like, yeah, at night, people get slow connections, that's what happens.
Yeah, welcome to college, Carl.
Yeah, seriously, I'm like, no, you don't understand, see, I do this show on Mondays, and, like, I need to have a stable connection to get on Skype. They're like, Skype, what's Skype?
No,
like,
come on.
Oh, give me a break.
I know some of those people.
They did not say, what is Skype?
Dude, they don't. I think I was talking to, like, their supervisor who probably didn't know what the fuck he was talking about.
No, all the tech people here are really smart, sorry, dude.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, well, there's going to be even more trouble brewing on FSU's campus after this weekend. When they lose to the Colorado Buffs.
Yeah, totally not going to happen, okay?
No, you're right. It's probably not going to happen.
You guys are going to look like Auburn, if I need say so.
Oh, seriously, brutal. Dude, USF? Really?
At least they're not Appalachian State, okay?
Seriously, at least they're Division
One. We are now doing a college football podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. I'd be down for that.
Radio Free Football.
We have to convince EA to put NCAA on Wii next year.
Yes.
Oh, God, I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, me too.
I would totally buy it. Yes. Yes, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
On Wii, though? Why?
And I would spend like 2 hours putting everyone's name into the Seminoles. I would definitely do that.
And then he would never play it again.
Yep.
Yeah, I really basically. Let me give you a video game story. I played a season of NCAA with my roommates a couple years ago, and we decided, like, let's make things fair. You know, we're not going to be in an awesome conference, so we all played Big East teams. And this was the season that Rutgers was actually really good, and I played Rutgers because I'm from New Jersey.
Rutgers
so
is good this year, actually.
No, I know, but this was the year Rutgers came back. This was last year.
Okay.
And I played so horribly that I managed to get my team kicked out of the Big East.
Very that's nice. Right. Okay.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, there you go. All right, I guess we should move on into the actual
show. What a
great
intro this has been.
This has been Radio Free Football. Now time to move on to Radio Free Nintendo. Let's go ahead into new business. Guys, do we have any new business?
I got it. I don't understand why Metroid Prime is getting such fantastic reviews. I said it.
Ouch.
I'm going to be the hater on Nintendo once again on this show, but I've gotten pretty far. I've gotten to the Metroids. I don't really think that's a spoiler, because, I mean, the game is called Metroid. So I've gotten to the Metroids in the game, and I still don't think it's that great. And here's why. All of the planets feel like long hallways of rooms that are just connected, very little branching off. It just seems like you go to one landing site, and you run down to the end of the hallway, and then you, like, get an item, and then you go back, or you take another landing site out, and then you go to a different landing site and repeat that process. It's like there's not enough exploration, and the other problem is they focused more on the shooting, and I really don't have a problem with that so much. The controls are excellent, but the AI is completely terrible. It stands there and gets shot. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I don't even dodge bad guys anymore, because I can stand there and shoot right at them, because they don't dodge you either, and you can just hammer down on the A button until they die.
Well, Obi, what difficulty are you playing on?
I'm playing on the standard difficulty.
Okay, I did too, and I would agree, but I don't know what the difference is on the higher levels. I don't know if the AI acts differently. I would hope that it does. I kind of doubt that it does.
I would wager that it does not, yeah.
Well, even if it does not, the tactic that you just described will not work, because they're going to do so much more damage to you that you'll have to dodge.
Well, okay, if you're fighting something that's gone hyper and is shooting Phazon at you, yes, you definitely have to dodge. But then it simply becomes a game of hide around corner, charge up, pop out, fire, hide, jump back behind corner, because they're still not moving. They're standing still shooting at you, so you can easily duck behind a wall or a corner and just repeat the process until they die.
When you get a little farther in the game, you will find enemies that move a lot, and you pretty much have to chase them down and stuff like that. So it does get better. But yeah, it's not a hardcore first-person shooter. That's for sure.
That's the problem for me is that they tried to make it more shooter-focused, and they took out a good chunk of the exploration and replaced it with shooting, but the shooting didn't step up in to replace the exploration. There's just more of it, and it's just as fine as it was in Metroid Prime 1 and 2, except if you're going to focus more on it, it should be better.
I think your characterization that they took exploration out to put shooting in is a false observation. I think what you say about exploration, I don't completely agree with, but I can kind of see where you're coming from.
It's not Talon 4. Talon 4 is very connected, and you know you're going in a lot of different places, and it branches out a lot.
But the reason that it's not connected is because these things happen on different planets, and the environments are smaller on each planet. In other words, the entire map area is really not any bigger or smaller than in the previous two games.
I think it might be a little bigger.
It's just more separated. It might be, but none of the planets are completely huge. But that I think is a separate decision that they made to put in multiple planets and kind of more disconnected environments. And there are some problems that you described that go with that, but I don't think that was done because of the shooting elements.
No, I don't think it was a separate decision.
It's a parallel thing going on. So I just want to dispel people's fears that, and hopefully there aren't any because they're actually playing the game now, but the fear that Prime 3 is more of a shooter than an adventure game because of the controls are different. It's not true. That's not how it happens. It's not Metroid Hunters, thank God. It is Metroid Prime. It's not Metroid Hunters.
I think one of my biggest issues with, I think the problem, the reason the shooting isn't as intense and as good as it could be is because on some level I think not retro, but Nintendo wanted to make it so that the game would have a wider appeal, and with a brand new control system, you can't throw a bunch of really complex stuff at people.
That would not surprise me, because Reggie said months ago that he was hoping it would reach out to a new audience, and they certainly haven't done that in terms of story or continuity or making the puzzles easier or anything like that. I mean, Prime 3 is really a game that I would not recommend to anyone who has not already played at least the first game.
Yeah.
It's just that it won't make a whole lot of sense, you know?
Yeah, you have to think, Penny Arcade talked about this on Downloadable Content last week, but you have to get in that Metroid mindset where, like, you have to look at the world and understand, like, oh, this is where a ball can go, and, oh, you know, obviously I can bomb that hatch off. Just by looking at it, I can tell you in a heartbeat that that is a bombable hatch or something like that. But other people don't see that stuff. They just see a spot on the ground that maybe looks a little different.
Right.
You have to have a real Metroid mindset to play these games.
Right.
But then when you get into them too much, they almost become easy. Like, I see things and I'm like, oh, that's obvious, that's obvious, that's obvious. But that's not Retro's fault. That's probably mine.
Well, there you go. Any other new business, guys, or should we move on to community?
Well, I guess I've got a little new business in that I started replaying Twilight Princess a few days ago.
Really? Wait, are you getting ready for Link's crossbow extravaganza?
Let's say that for later, please.
No, surely you jest. No, like I said, I started playing it a few days ago before we heard anything about that. And I thought I had mentioned this before on the podcast, but maybe I didn't. But the reason I wanted to do it is because I had to play through it so fast the first time through that I really didn't have time to kind of linger and enjoy it and think about it as I went through. So I'm just trying to go through in a more relaxed pace and not worry about tracking down every single little doodad. It's going to be a more direct playthrough, I think. But it's cool, and I'm noticing things that I had forgotten about or just didn't have time to really think about very much the first time. I think the graphics are very impressive. I mean, if I look at it from as a GameCube game, which it basically is, it's definitely one of the top two or three best-looking GameCube games ever made. I know Wii can do better, and Metroid Prime 3 certainly does look better overall, technically and especially artistically, but Twilight Princess has some really impressive stuff going on. It also has some places that look kind of crappy. There's some nasty looking textures here and there, and it's just stuff that I wish they had cleaned up. And probably on the Wii, they had the power to clean that stuff up fairly easily, but because they wanted them to look the same, and they probably couldn't do that stuff on GameCube. So,
and it, well, you know, it might have been an issue of, you know, rushing it a little towards the end, and that's one of the things that got you know, sort of pushed to the side.
The game was in development for 3 years. Yeah, I just don't. I don't buy that. It was delayed.
No, but I mean,
for
how long was
over
it?
A year.
Wii development for?
Probably about a year. Probably about a year, I assume.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah.
Redoing an entire game's worth of textures, I can understand some getting by and not making it.
Yes, yeah, I can too. I can understand it. The other thing, I remember when the game first came out, so this was like a week after I had started playing it, people were complaining that the beginning of it was really kind of slow and boring. Mm-hmm. And that didn't occur to me when I was playing through it, because I don't, maybe I was so excited to get the Wii, or I was just so thrilled about having the Zelda game, and actually, probably the main reason is I didn't have time to sit around and think about, wow, this part is boring, because I had to play through a 50-hour game in 6 days. And now that I'm playing through it again, I have to say the first hour at least is really, really damn boring. In fact, I was playing it like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago, and it was the day that I had started to replay it, and I was kind of drowsy when I got home. I'd had a couple beers out on the town, and I got back and turned it on. And I actually fell asleep while playing it. And the funny thing is, you know, I was running around with my thumb on the joystick, and I was holding it up to make Link run, because in the beginning of the game, you have to do a lot of running around, basically, from across a pretty good distance. And sometimes I would nod off and I would wake up and Link would still be moving, but he'd just be barely crawling forward because my thumb had relaxed and it didn't have enough pressure on the joystick to make him run full blast. So anyway, I thought that was pretty funny. But luckily I made it through that part and I'm at the good stuff now.
Well, can I just make a quick blanket statement about the Zelda franchise?
Yeah.
If the next console Zelda is just like Twilight Princess, and I mean that from like a traditional gameplay point of view, I'm done with Zelda. Really? No, really, because like honestly, it's starting to get a little tired.
The formula is wearing a little thin.
Well, I would agree. The thing is, I don't think Twilight Princess gets enough credit for changing the formula as much as it does. As much like, I think in some ways it's as crazy as Majora's Mask is, in that you have Link transforming into another form that, for most of the game, you can't control, at least the first half of the game, you can't control which form he's in. He plays quite differently, and you're going through the Twilight, and things are very, very different there. The story is told in an unusual order for a Zelda game. It's not, go meet Princess Zelda, and then she puts you on a quest, things like that. It's not like that at all. And also the way the items are given to you is kind of a really unusual order. Like when you get things like the iron boots really early in the game. I think that's kind of an interesting choice that they made. And then I have to give them credit also for throwing in some new items, for using some items in different ways than you did before. I mean, it is in some ways a very conservative thing, but at the same time, it's not a complete copy of Ocarina of Time. There's actually a lot different between the two games. So it is progress, but I mean, I'm definitely with you, Carl. I'd like them to do more. I'd like them to push a little harder than that.
My problem with Zelda's always been the plot. It's always like really generic.
It's not so bad in Twilight Princess.
It's not as bad in Twilight Princess. No, it's definitely a step forward in Twilight Princess, but it's still like, you know, I guess its problem is that they never give Link any, like they give him some character. They don't give him any real character because he never talks.
Right. I think
that's like, you know, that's a double-edged sword. You can make him talk, but then you open up a whole another set of problems.
Well, and their solution to that is to give you these sidekick characters like Navi and whatever the fairy's name in Majora's Mask was, and Midna especially. And Midna is when they finally got it right. She's actually an interesting character, and she has this odd kind of conflicting relationship with Link, and you're not sure what her true motives are. And I think that's great. And I just wish they would keep doing that and do a better and better job of it, because unlike Samus, who I think in the next Metroid game Samus will actually have voice acting, I really do, like real voice acting, not but Link, I don't think he ever will. I don't think they're ever going to do that, so they just need to find effective ways to get around that restriction that they're placing on themselves. But Midna's a good step forward.
And they do it, too, so they can make it feel more like you're playing the game. Like, if, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same reason Mario doesn't talk in any of the mainline Mario games. He only talks in, like, the side stuff.
I think it's better that Mario doesn't talk, because he's not that interesting of a character. Well, he doesn't really have a personality.
He's really, like, a good, really prime candidate for that sort of Charlie Chaplin pantomime stuff.
Yeah, because he's a comic character. Link is not, and it makes it more
Link's
difficult.
Dramatic, unfortunately.
But there are there are a lot of games where the characters talk, and you can still identify with them. I mean, Metal Gear Solid is a good example. You know,
Master Chief, get out of here with that.
Whatever,
Master Chief. Well, I guess
if you want to feel like a badass space marine.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. So I think we've gone on long enough for new business. Let's go ahead and move on to community. Which is, no, it's fine. We like to mix it up here. And today is actually a double dip of Mike's crazy mailbag. We answered this first question last week, but unfortunately we lost our first segment. And, you know, Mike wasn't actually here, so, you know, he has a time now to have
it's better this
two
way.
Questions. Yeah, it's better this
I'm going to let you guys handle the second one because it's definitely directed at Johnny. But the first one is Chiron, he asks, why do you hate me? Apparently, we recommend Virtual Console games for everybody, but he always hates them, and we always pan the games he does like. And, you know, he says we can't let him use his real name on the forums, and he says, I guess, apparently we think he's a bad Nintendo fanboy, which he spells as if he was Avril Lavigne. And what has he done to deserve this?
Okay, first of all, let me point out that what he's talking about when he says... You recommend it for nobody but me. I, you know, famously on the forum said not recommended except for Chiron.
Okay.
So well, that's what he's talking
Carl,
about.
Which apparently, game? I don't know why Carl hates you. I don't hate you. Maybe, Johnny, do you hate Chiron?
I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about Chiron. Sorry.
That's ouch. I don't spend almost any time on the forums, unfortunately, except to read like the RFN talkback thread, and even then, I don't really pay that much attention. Carl
doesn't
spends,
really care what you.
Carl
think.
Probably spends more time on the forums than me, but it's my crazy mailbag, and the answer to what you've done to deserve this is by being a Nintendo fanboy. I don't like fanboys. I'm sorry. There's no room in my heart for fanboys. You're anyone who picks a system and sticks with it and fights in the trenches is like. An idiot. I'm sorry. There's great games on every console.
The way he spelled it, isn't it more like fanbois? You know, like Lauryn Hill and the Fugees song? Bois?
French. I, you know what? You shouldn't have even tried that. My Avril Lavigne joke was way better.
Oh.
Okay, whatever. I mean, I know the Fugees aren't exactly contemporary, but...
No.
You are an old man, Jonathan Metz.
Yeah. I grew up in the 90s, Carl.
Woo! So did I.
No, that doesn't count.
I was born in 89. What are you talking about?
You were not in high school at any point during the
Carl, years. You can't even remember half the 90s.
Whatever, dude. I remember the
90s. What year did the Berlin Wall fall?
91?
Okay. I feel terrible. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head either. He could have said 88 or
I think it was the
97.
80s.
I'm pretty sure.
I think it was 89.
No, I'm going to look it up. Hold on.
Look it up, Mike. Because I want us to settle this.
Where am I?
Where am I? This is Radio Free History, apparently.
Radio Free Cold War.
Okay,
history.
When did it fall?
1990.
Okay,
1990.
Whatever.
What?
I guess
you were two.
I was one. Well, 1990. I was almost gonna be two.
Yeah,
almost gonna be. Whatever. How old were you when the Berlin Wall fell?
Seven.
Okay, I'm sure you were really engulfed in world politics at the time.
I was.
Whatever. Okay, let's move on. This is stupid. Andy asks, I could have sworn that Camelot is the same team that developed the Shining Force games for the Genesis. Those were pretty good RPGs, and some of the polish is shown in Golden Sun. So, okay, this is actually directed at Johnny because he was saying in the last episode that Camelot's RPG efforts have been crap.
Shady at best.
And, but I think, Johnny, what you're forgetting is that Camelot used to be called Sonic Software Planning, and they did develop the Shining Force games, at least the first few.
Oh, I'm glad you looked that up, because I forgot to.
I looked it up.
In my defense, I would say that Shining Force is not really an RPG. It's more of a strategy game.
So, you suck because of semantics.
It's the wait. Let me give a shout out. Let me give a shout out here, as if as Yahtzee of Zero Punctuation would say, it's the Invisible Pigeonholing Committee's fault.
Okay. No one's gonna get that reference.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna give it's a straight up shout funny, out plug. So you should all be watching Zero Punctuation Wednesdays on The Escapist. Funniest thing you will ever watch.
Yeah, okay. Johnny, go ahead, please.
Anyway, as I was going to say before Mike interrupted with his dumb reference.
Okay, Mr. Fugees.
Assuming, and I haven't played any of the Shining Force games, but assuming they are great strategy RPGs, it would have been nice if Camelot had put some of that strategy into Golden Sun.
Because
there ain't none.
Well, there
Golden
you go.
Sun's pretty damn easy.
It's not only easy, it's so easy that it's boring. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I went into detail last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Sorry, Andy. He doesn't really change his mind about it. But you were right. They did develop the Shining Force and Shining in the Darkness game, so
And by the way, I'm not a Camelot hater. I've interviewed the Takahashi brothers, and they're some of the coolest guys in the gaming industry I ever met. But that doesn't mean Golden Sun is a good game.
Yeah, I remember I actually wrote the Lifetime Achievement Award as my first article on Planet GameCube to Hiroyuki and Shugo Takahashi. And that's why I remember their first names. They did that. They did Hot Shots Golf
and Mario Golf,
they've done most of the recent Mario sports games.
Yeah.
So yeah, dude, they've definitely got talent. I guess John just doesn't think they have it in the RPG field.
Well, Golden Sun had some cool ideas, but overall, it's
and it was very pretty looking.
Very pretty.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. That actually wraps us up for community. So when we come back, we're talking about the news. See you on the other side. Good folks, and we're back. First up, VC Mondays, NES Pro Action Football, which has four players.
Pretty cool, and also it's the start of football season, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. How do you play with four players on the NES?
Didn't they have a multi-tap?
Yeah, it was one. There were two multi-taps. One was called the Four Score,
that's
and
it.
The other one was called something else. But I think they both used infrared wireless technology, which was awful, awful stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's probably actually much improved on the Wii because you don't have to deal with all that crap. You just use four Wii remotes or four GameCube controllers.
Yeah.
Right. Then Sonic 3, which I actually, oddly enough, owned on the PC.
What? That's
interesting.
Yeah, I think it was like my 12th birthday, somebody bought me a Sonic like anniversary collection. And like, oh, here's the best part. It says on the cover, Y2K compliant.
That needs to be the image on the AAC right now.
Yeah. And what's even better is that it can't be played on Windows XP.
Aww.
Not even in compatibility mode?
No.
That's because Windows XP is not Y2K compliant.
Oh. So yeah,
Here's the thing about Sonic 3 though. It's kind of a ripoff because if you already bought Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 on your Wii, you can't play as Knuckles just by buying Sonic 3. Which would be awesome if you could.
What?
If it like enabled Sonic 3 was a lock on cartridge. You could play
Obi. No, that was Sonic and Knuckles is a lock on cartridge. Sonic 3 is the best Sonic game. Period.
Oh, dude, I love Sonic. Even though I had it on PC.
It's the best.
It is freaking awesome.
It is the best Sonic game. You should download it.
I guess if you were to get the best version, it would be Sonic 3 and Knuckles. But still, Sonic 3 is awesome. And if you're going to get one of the Sonics, definitely Sonic 3 is the one to go with.
But Sonic 3 and Knuckles just means you're playing as Knuckles in Sonic 3.
Right.
I don't see why that's necessarily better than playing as Sonic in Sonic 3.
But so wait, okay, if I download Sonic 3 on the Wii, do I get Knuckles or do I only get Sonic?
You get Sonic.
No Knuckles.
I don't think you get Knuckles.
Well,
no, I'm pretty sure you
hold on, hold on now. Sonic and Knuckles is a separate game.
Yeah.
It's basically Sonic 4. And I think Sega will probably release that on Virtual Console. Whether they ever find a way to do the backwards compatibility with Sonic 3 and Sonic 2 so you can play as Knuckles in those games, I don't know. But it's really not that big of a deal. I mean, playing as Knuckles is not very different from playing as Sonic.
Oh, it's not really.
Yeah, it's more of a gimmick thing. So it's not a big deal.
Right.
Well,
and
there you go.
In my opinion, Sonic 3 is better than Sonic and Knuckles. It has the lightning shield and the fire shield and the water shield. It's freaking sweet.
Oh, yeah. Which are freaking badass.
Yes, all
man,
three
feel
of them
bad.
Are
I
awesome.
Totally feel bad that I bought Sonic 2 now.
Yeah, you get those power-ups.
Why do you feel bad that you bought Sonic 2?
Because I don't know. I don't like it that much. I was always under the impression that it was the best Sonic game.
No,
Sonic 3 is better. So, I mean, Sonic 2 is a huge improvement over the first one, but Sonic 3 is, in my opinion, the best. I think Sonic and Knuckles kind of... I don't remember why I don't like it as much, but I don't.
Well, I think, you know, Sonic 3 has those awesome power-ups. Like, you know, if you have the fireball, you can do, like, that dash with it. If you got the bubble one, you can breathe underwater, obviously.
Yeah, if you get the lightning shield, not only can you double jump, but it also is, like, magnetically attracting all the rings nearby to you, so you don't even have to touch them.
Oh, so good.
No, I would buy that just for water shield, because when you get underwater in Sonic the Hedgehog, it's, like, the most frustrating thing ever.
Yeah, pretty much. And as I remember, there aren't as many, like, bottomless pits in Sonic 3 as there are in, like, some of the other Sonic games.
I haven't seen any so far. I played it for about 15 minutes this afternoon, and I haven't seen any bottomless pits yet.
There are some, I think, in the water level, and some in, like, the fourth stage, I think. But for the most part, not that many, which is something that I hate about Sonic games, especially Sonic Rush.
Well, this is interesting. Apparently, Sega originally hired Michael Jackson to compose the music for Sonic 3.
Oh, that is an interesting... That's kind of a conspiracy theory. There's a really cool YouTube video about it. You should look it up later.
Not now. Later.
No, not now. Please shut your friggin' browser.
I have to, like, beat Mike off of his computer.
I'm telling you.
Anyway, so... And last up, Newtopia 2. The first one came out, like, I think it was, like, a month ago?
Yeah, not long.
And...
Well, it must have sold fairly well on virtual console.
And it got, like, some pretty good praise. Like, people seemed to like it. I think it was, like... It described as, like, a Zelda for TG-16, so...
Yeah.
Awesome, cool.
So this is like a Zelda 2 for TG-16.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not.
Said it, not me.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on into our actual news, which is the dumbass rumor confirmed. Wii Zapper. Coming out for $20. Actually, $19.99 if you want to argue semantics.
It's the world's most expensive piece of plastic.
Ever. And it's going to be on sale starting November 19th. But here's the cool part.
It comes with the game.
What's that game, Mike?
Well, it's not Duck Hunt, so, you know, there's no need for you to waste your money, essentially.
It's Zelda Crossbow Training.
Oh my god. They're definitely big fans of the word training in their video games. They've been seeping into Zelda Crossbow Training. Like,
they should have included it with brain training. It's like you can shoot brains or something.
This is the dumbest thing ever.
This is probably, like, one of the biggest WTF moments in video games. Like, okay, so you're releasing a Zapper, which is essentially a reincarnation of one of the most popular... No, Nate, the most popular NES accessory, the ever. Zapper. It's using the same name, so you're carrying on that Zapper brand, but you're not giving us Duck Hunt. Are you completely retarded? This is, like, I don't understand whose decision this was. Like, where along the line was someone like, you know what people would really like with a Zapper? A game where you get to pretend you have a crossbow and not shoot ducks and not have a dog laugh at you.
How do you know ducks and dogs are not in Zelda Crossbow, Link's Crossbow Training?
If there's a laughing dog in Link's Crossbow Training, I would actually half consider buying it.
What if you shoot at Link in wolf form?
No. If Link pops up in wolf form laughing because you can't shoot whatever the targets are, that might be funny, though.
This introduces so many questions, I think. First of all, we really should be fair to this and not make fun of it because we don't have any screenshots. We don't have any real information about it.
Other than that, it's
actually
stupid.
Brad was telling me over AIM earlier, I think it was Brad, was saying, like, I can't believe they haven't gotten over the damn tech demo thing with Wii games. And I was like, what makes you think the original Duck Hunt was anything more than a tech demo for the Zapper? Well, especially by today's standards.
Yeah, that's a very good opinion, Johnny, and it makes a lot of sense, but the problem is back then, we didn't have anything better, like, you know?
Yeah, tech demo could get by as a real game.
Well, I'm taken by surprise by this, and it's not what I wanted. But I wasn't 100% sure they were going to do Duck Hunt. I thought it was the obvious choice and probably the best choice, but I wasn't expecting this, considering Link has never used a crossbow in any Zelda game. I think it's kind of strange.
Well, yeah, and then, like, when you look at it, this is just going to be probably, they said back when they talked about the Zapper that it was going to be sort of like a mini game kind of thing. So it's really just probably going to be a game where you shoot at targets on the screen with a Zelda theme. If you're going to do a game where you shoot at targets on the screen, why the hell wouldn't you use Duck Hunt?
Well, yeah. I can think of a few reasons.
It's the exact same game.
Mike, I can think of a few reasons.
I can too. They all involve money.
From Nintendo's perspective, you notice back at E3, they would not call this thing a gun. They wouldn't use the word gun anywhere near the zapper.
Yeah.
And if you pack it in with a game called Duck Hunt, guess what? You're shooting ducks with a gun, not a zapper.
And you can pretend to be Dick Cheney.
Well, you know, you have animal rights problems, you have violence, you have, you know, if you have a game where Nintendo is promoting the use of an accessory to use their system literally like a gun, like a real gun, even though it could be cartoony, it's still a gun.
Well, you know, you can even look at the way the Zapper was designed. When we saw the original Zapper when the Wii was unveiled, it was, you know, a device that sort of made the Wii remote look like a shotgun, where you plugged it in and it became the barrel of the gun and there was a joystick on the back. You know, it was essentially the same as what it is now, except it looked a hell of a lot more like a gun before.
Right. Now it looks more like a crossbow, to be fair.
Or a machine gun.
It kind of looks like a Tommy gun now, but before it looked exactly like a shotgun.
Yes.
I mean, also you have to consider, what are you going to be shooting at here? I mean, what is it going to be? Octoroks? Deku midgets? I mean, seriously, what are you going to be shooting at
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a carnival sort of shooting gallery, like an Ocarina of Time, where, like, you know, like little cardboard Octoroks float up and pop up and go across the screen and stuff like that.
Well, luckily, I actually read the press release about this game, and I can tell you that you start off by shooting at stationary targets, and then you move up to, eventually, it said, fending off hordes of enemies.
Oh.
So, here's the thing. The Zapper has a unit for, has a slot for the nunchuck, which lets you use the joystick while you play. If this game is designed to really show off what the Zapper can do, it should include some elements where you have to move around with the joystick. So this could be almost like a Zelda first-person shooter. Probably a very dumbed-down version of that. But there could actually be environments where you have to walk around and find things and shoot at them. It could be a little more interesting than you guys are assuming.
Oh, you know, I wouldn't be surprised me if you use the joystick to shift your field of view and the Zapper to just aim on the screen, sort of like what Resident Evil 4 does.
Could be.
The more I hear about this, the more I just think Legend of Zelda Umbrella Chronicles.
I think Umbrella Chronicles is a lot more advanced than this, because in Umbrella Chronicles, it's the environments are interactive, and you have branching paths, and it's a real game. It's a light gun game, but it's a real game. This is, I don't know. I mean, consider also, this is $20, and you get the hardware, which
the plastic.
I know it's a piece of plastic. It doesn't actually do anything.
Not call it hardware or accessory. It's just plastic.
Okay, yeah. But you get that and the game. So there's a question of whether you're paying $20 for the plastic and getting the game free, or paying $20 for the game and getting the plastic free. And either way, I think it's probably
a
good deal. I think it's a pretty good deal if the game is decent, if it's fun. And look at the deal of Wii Play. People are paying essentially $10 for Wii Play, and most people are pretty happy with it that I've talked to. I know quite a few people who bought Wii Play, and they're like, yeah, it's not that great, but it's $10.
Right, but the difference is there, at least when you buy Wii Play, you're getting like something of actual value. This is you're getting a $40 device with actual electronic components inside it that actually does something that is not something you could have fabricated in your shop.
Okay,
on the weekend.
Okay, but you are still essentially paying $10 for Wii Play. What if Link's Crossbow Training is twice as good as Wii Play? It costs twice as much, and you get this thing for free. You can throw it away if you want to.
It's a good point. I mean, it's only $20, and that's the bright side of this whole thing.
Yeah, obviously, I'm extremely glad that they're selling this thing at such a low price point, because the thing with Wii Play is that the reason people can justify spending $50 for it is that they need another remote. And in this case, nobody needs the Zapper. So Nintendo has realized this, and they've priced it accordingly, and they've made it a lot cheaper. I think, regardless of how good this game is or how useless the Zapper really is, this is going to be a big seller this holiday season.
Oh, yeah. $20, it's going to be under a lot of trees.
If you're going to pick up a Wii for the first time and you see this thing there for $20, it's no duh purchase.
Yeah.
It's a dummy purchase. Obviously, you're going to get it. It's the cheapest game for the system, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Well, Absolutely. Except for virtual console games.
Yeah.
They don't understand that. That requires online and thinking.
Yeah. I would love to see, you know, virtual console Duck Hunt work with the Wii remote, and God help us, it will.
Hey, you know, Duck Hunt, well, oh yeah, that would be cool, but the other reason that this isn't Duck Hunt could be that they're actually making a real Duck Hunt game, and they want to get some market penetration with the zapper and then sell Duck Hunt for $50.
Yeah, I could see that too. Well, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if Duck Hunt came out on WiiWare for like another $20.
Yeah, they could do that too.
Because then you cut out all your manufacturing costs. It's just straight digital distribution. And you get a lot more profit on that $20 because there's no retail share. There's no manufacturing cost for the disc. There's no manufacturing cost for the plastic. There's no shipping cost to get it to the store.
Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah, this is all very... We have a lot of questions about this, the whole Wii Zapper with Duck Hunt and everything, so we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. Moving on, Iwata talked with Level Up's end guy, Kroll, and then he said, Nintendo must not become arrogant. And I think the keyword here is again.
Again.
Yeah. and I don't think Nintendo's arrogant, I just think they're dumb. Sometimes.
Sometimes they can be the same thing.
Yeah.
Depends on what you're talking about.
I mean, the thing is that they are extremely smart at predicting market trends, like ridiculously, like stupid smart.
Except with the GameCube and the N64.
Yeah, but I mean, as of late.
I mean, in the micro.
And the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, no. I'm talking about like Iwata age Nintendo.
He does a good job of it for sure.
Yeah, like since Iwata's taken over, you can't deny that Nintendo has made like a complete 180.
I think Iwata is an excellent president of Nintendo.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Definitely a step up from Yamauchi.
But in terms of arrogance, and this has not changed under Iwata really at all, but with the way that they relate to the media, Nintendo has always been arrogant in the 6 years that I've worked with them, and that hasn't changed one bit. In fact, it's gotten worse, if anything.
Okay.
So I don't know.
At the end of the day, you know, arrogance with the media doesn't have any real relevance to the consumer.
You're right. The average person doesn't care. But that's my perspective of Nintendo. That's the way I see them, is in how they treat me. And they've always been arrogant with me. Always. And that what you hear about other companies like Microsoft and Sony is very, very different. And I think that's unfortunate because, you know, it does eventually trickle down to the consumer. If they would treat us a little better and be a little more open with us, then we could get better coverage, and that would ultimately benefit the consumer level. But anyway, it's obviously not what Iwata was talking about here.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, what I was going to say is that while they are very, very good at predicting marketing trends as of late, they mess up on the easy stuff. Really? Like
an Ethernet jack on the Wii?
Like, I'm talking about something as easy as, like, you know, something like an online setup. All you have to do is copy Xbox Live. That's what PlayStation did.
Well, yeah. That's not necessarily easy.
No, Xbox Live
it's not easy to implement.
System.
Oh no, I'm just saying that the concept of console online gaming is there. It is so easy to copy.
Yeah, it was created and perfected by Microsoft. No one has gotten close to getting anything nearly as good as it.
I mean, and they had like what, 2 full years of seeing how much people hate friend codes on the DS. To find out that, you know, oh, I guess we shouldn't maybe use this with Wii, but we're going to anyway.
That's not, I wouldn't call that so much as arrogance as it is, like, them trying to be overly safe about everything. Very cautious.
But it's cautious to a fault.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm not saying it's not.
But it's not the same as arrogant.
Yeah. So, no, I'm not saying that they're arrogant. I'm just saying that they're stupid with things that they shouldn't be stupid with.
Okay, but if we're going to, if that's our discussion, then we could spend the rest of the show talking about that.
Yeah,
it doesn't have anything to do with them being arrogant,
right? I don't think they're arrogant. That's what I'm gonna say. I don't think they're arrogant. And John, do you think they're arrogant? I mean, you obviously think they're arrogant with you,
with me,
with you specifically.
In general, I think they've been pretty good lately.
I think stubborn.
Looking, I mean, I assume what he's talking about is basically in their third party relations.
Yeah,
because they got very arrogant after the NES era. And it hurt them somewhat in the Super NES era, and it really hurt them in the N64 era once Sony came in.
Yeah.
That's what he's talking about, really. And in that sense, they've been much better. They've made major improvements. So, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I think, like I just said, I think stubborn is probably a better word to describe Nintendo nowadays.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of third-party relations, Vanillaware, who you'll know as the developer of Odin Sphere... And which is like the first game they made since like the Sega Saturn. No, really,
because before that, would they do Princess Land or what is it called?
I don't remember what it's called, but it's something.
It's that princess game for Saturn, and then they released a port of it on PSP.
Right, and like really well
Princess
received.
Crown, I think.
Yeah, I think that is actually. Princess Crown. I think it's it actually. Yeah, Princess Crown. And then they released Odin Sphere on the PS2, which everybody like almost unanimously seemed to like. because it was very pretty. It's a 2D action side-scrolling. It's a side-scrolling action RPG. But it's all 2D, and the sprites are gorgeous. They're super high res, and you know they're like the sprites are massive. Like they take up the entire screen. The only real concern with it was that there were some frame rate problems. But what's cool is that VanillaWare is making a new game. Go ahead.
I said there won't be any frame rate problems on Wii.
I would hope not. But yeah, they're making a Wii game called, and I'm gonna try to pronounce this the best way I can, Oboro Muramasa Yotoden. And I'm just gonna call that OMY for the remainder of the show.
Omi.
And it's really cool. There's no word yet on a localization or U.S. release or anything like that. But Johnny informed me that the publisher in Japan, Marvelous, does all of their publishing in the U.S. via Natsume.
Yeah, because Marvelous publishes all the Harvest Moon games in Japan.
No?
I thought it was Atlas.
No, Atlas doesn't publish Marvelous stuff.
It's Natsume.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not.
Sorry, your notes say Odin's Fear was published in Japan.
Those notes are wrong. Johnny corrected me.
Odin's Fear was published in America by Atlas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was also published in Japan by Atlas.
Right. This is just the same developer, different publisher. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've seen screens of it so far. I think Famitsu has some stuff up. And it looks gorgeous.
It looks very much really, like Odin's Fear.
I would say it looks on par with like what you would see in like a Guilty Gear game, which famously has very, very good sprites.
Yeah.
So yeah, very cool. I'm always into a cool 2D side-scrolling action game, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. Next up on the list, Eternity's Child, which is an interactive story tale by artist Luke Bernard, is switching platforms for his game. It was originally going to be on Xbox Live Arcade, but now it's going to be on the Wii. Probably not as downloadable, which means it's probably going to be like a discount or full-price game, which is not that awesome, to be honest.
I don't care because I'm probably not going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, I probably won't either.
I look at some screens of it. It's really pretty.
I saw a screen on Kotaku today.
Interactive storytale. Sounds like a digital novel or something.
It worked for Hotel Dusk.
Did it?
Yeah, I don't really want to play a game like Hotel Dusk on the Wii.
That's fair.
But you will, because Harvey Birdman is coming out for the Wii.
Yes, which is our next story. It's awesome.
That's kind of different.
Kind of, but it's still an interactive text-type adventure thing.
Yeah, but also funny and not text.
Yeah, Capcom had already announced this for PSP and PS2, but now they announced today that it's coming to Wii, and all they have to do is graft the Phoenix Wright gameplay onto Harvey Birdman.
I don't think there's any doubt that that's what they're doing.
I don't know. They haven't said.
Really
don't
think that is any... exactly what I've seen a video of it. It is Phoenix Wright with different characters and voice acting because it's on a console.
Good. That's what I want. Yeah. Really.
It's cool.
I'm a whore.
Phoenix Wright for console with voice.
That's what I want. I mean, it's being written by the Adult Swim guys, and like it's going to have the voice acting, which means Stephen Colbert is going to be in the game, and really, I can't wait.
Yeah. Funny.
Very, very good. Yeah, and okay, our last news story for the day is...
we're ending on a downer, folks.
Yeah. EA has announced Boogie for DS.
This poses a very important question as to who the hell bought Boogie that they're making another one?
It just came out. They couldn't have even gotten the sales ad on it yet.
They want to make it into a franchise, man. They want it to be the new Sims.
Yeah.
Ugh, it is. Now, look, I was kind of semi-interested in Boogie when it was first announced because it was made by the same dudes who did SSX Blur, which I think is a very good game. So I was like,
It has equally good graphics.
Yeah, yeah. And so like I was like, oh, cool, this might be a good game. Like, it's a pretty talented team.
It seemed like, well, you know, everyone, I think, leading up to Boogie seemed like it was going to be at least like a half-decent party game.
Yeah. And then it just turned out to be made of suck. just made of suck. And... I looked at the video today of the DS version, and it looks like, you know, instead of gesturing around, you're tapping along to the beat or whatever, and you got the microphone. So I don't know if they said there's going to be karaoke in it, but if there is, I assume it's via the DS microphone. Which would make sense.
God. If they do a karaoke game for DS, that would be kind of huge.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really cool because nobody's done that. But I don't think they're going to do that because it's probably too hard to do on DS.
I don't know. I don't quote me on it, but that would just be like, oh, karaoke game. There's a microphone built into the DS.
Could do it. You know, it's just if an MP3 with words on the bottom of the screen. You know.
Yeah.
But Mike, it has to have voice recognition.
Yeah.
That's the definition of a karaoke game.
Well, you know, the
original... That's the hard part to do in DS.
The original Brain Age karaoke really revolution limited. Games only measured your pitch.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would be too terribly difficult to do on the DS. Now,
yeah,
if
well,
go
nobody's done it yet, and it's kind of an obvious thing to do with the DS microphone, and nobody's done it.
I think the bigger limitation to that might be the DS microphone and not the DS software, or not the DS chips decoding that kind of stuff. I think the microphone quality would probably be the nail in the coffin of a DS karaoke
game. Well, you could use the headset...
But you know what? The minute you make everyone have a headset, the sales are going to drop. Unless you
not
include
if they
the
include the headset with the game, like they did with the microphone with the Wii version, it's pretty damn obvious.
Yeah, but I see it makes more sense on a console because the profit margin is higher.
Maybe I don't know about that, but the other problem is you can't put as much music on a DS game.
No.
You could have 15 songs, you know, London or whatever, but. Not a lot. Not a ton.
Yeah, I think the point here is that we're really not looking forward much to Boogie DS.
Yeah, no.
Not so much.
I'm curious. If it's the first karaoke game for DS, I'm curious. But then at the same time, the karaoke was apparently completely broken in the Wii version, so they'd have to fix that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll have some more enthralling stuff for you when we come back from this break, because we're talking about the current status of war in video games, so stay tuned. Okay, folks, and we're back. War, what is it good for in video games?
Money. It makes lots and lots and lots and lots of money.
Well, you can't really argue with that. I mean, Call of Duty, Medal of Honor, one of the other ones.
Battlefield.
Brothers in Arms. Company of Heroes, Command & Conquer. I mean, Jesus, they're all.
Duty of Publisher.
Yeah, seriously. Really what we've seen mostly in recent years is World War II. You know, Penny Arcade famously said, Omaha Beach is the new Hoth.
Yeah. Very telling Penny Arcade strip.
So, now we're kind of branching out into different eras of war. Call of Duty is doing modern combat.
But that's not really based on any period in
it's
history.
Not based on a real war. I think it's that's kind of almost a different subject.
It's very Tom Clancy-ish almost from what I've seen.
Well, I think what they're going with the name Modern Warfare is present-day tech, not present-day...
Well, it's actually more like 6 or 7 years ahead of where we are technology-wise, because today's technology isn't exciting enough to be in a video game. It's not there yet.
Well, then
but 1940s technology is exciting enough to be in a video game.
Yeah.
Well, it's different. That's a period piece.
I guess. But
today's war technology is like on the verge of like what we see in the video games. Like the Splinter Cell stuff is like the stuff that Tom Clancy writes about is the stuff.
But Splinter Cell is not a war game.
No, it's an espionage spy type thing. But
that's a totally different thing.
What they've shown of Call of Duty 4 is not stuff that could be heavily replicated on the battlefield today. It's like very small units of soldiers have this kind of technology. It's not like every soldier on the battlefield is equipped with all this stuff.
Okay, but. That's completely beside the point. I would argue that Call of Duty 4 is not really a war game in the sense that I would talk about in this feature. The reason that I came up with this idea dates to a few years back when I was out in San Francisco to see a demo of Call of Duty Finest Hour. And one of the things they did for this game was bring in this Panther unit. I don't remember the name of the unit, but it was a... It was a bunch of guys who drove tanks in World War II, and they brought them in to consult on the game. And, of course, these guys are all like 70, 80 years old now, and they're... I just kept trying to think in my mind, what did these guys think of the game when they saw it? Did they feel... I don't know. I mean, a war, for a veteran, to bring up a war at all brings up memories that you may or may not really want to relive. But then to be invited by a game company... to come see them recreate your experiences in this war, which may be very traumatic and terrible, in an interactive form that's rated T for teen and has no blood, so a little kid can play through it and have fun killing the Nazis. What would you think about that as an 80-year-old veteran of World War II?
Yeah, it's definitely...
To be brought in as a consultant on this.
It's a very different situation than being brought in to consult on something like Saving Private Ryan or The Thin Red Line or something
like that. Right, but really the point of those movies is to revere these things and to look at the moral conundrums of war. And a, yeah. In fact, almost every war movie is anti-war in some sense, with very few... None of the realistic ones are pro-war, really.
No, right. Like, if you look at Saving Private Ryan... Except maybe Operation Dumbo Drop.
But, like, if you look at something like Saving Private Ryan, really the message of that movie is, war is not glamorous, it sucks.
Yeah, war is hell. That's Saving Private Ryan.
And the funny thing is, the closest thing we have to that in video game form is Conker's Bad Fur Day.
What?
I'm serious. Have you played Conker's Bad Fur Day?
Yeah.
I have not, actually. Yeah.
There is a scene in that that's based on Saving Private Ryan, instead of being a straightforward spoof, it's actually really freaking disturbing. Like, Conker's in this boat, and you see all these little animals around him being shot through the head, and there's blood and brain splattered all over the wall, and you're like, it's funny, but at the same time, it's really kind of harrowing to watch. He crawls up on the beach, and it's scary in the same way that the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan is really hard to watch.
Yeah. Like, I remember when Saving Private Ryan came out, and yes, I do remember when Saving Private Ryan came out.
I was 3 years old.
I was, like, 8 at the time, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, I remember that there was, like, these reports on the news of, like, veterans having to, like, walk out of the movie because it was so hard to see.
Hell, I cried at the end of that movie for, like, I don't know, at least 15 minutes. It's so hard to watch.
Dude, it's rough. It's a rough movie.
It's rough. And I guess I'm kind of lamenting the fact that video games don't treat war in the respectful and realistic way that movies do. How many World War II games are rated M?
I don't think any of them, maybe.
And let me just ask this. There is a fundamental choice between shooting a guy in a World War II game when he's just going to shrivel up and disappear 2 seconds later, and shooting a guy that you then have to watch his organs spill out and hear him crying for his mother in another language, and then left wondering, should I really have done that?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a fundamental ethical difference in the way these things are presented, and a lot of it comes down to the presentation. I think there's a really an ethical problem with showing a real war, historical events, and cleaning them up for the Disney crowd, which is essentially what games like Medal of Honor and Call of Duty, that's exactly what they do.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that, because I remember seeing an interview with David Jaffe, whose PSP game was just that, the repercussions of your actions in a war game, where, right, you know, when you shoot somebody, they don't just fade away. They you know, they fall over and they scream, and you know, there's blood everywhere, and you're wondering, was that the right decision? There are actually consequences.
And you have the decision whether or not to do that again.
And BioShock, you know, it's a totally different game, but BioShock does the same situation where it puts you in that position of choice, and it makes you look at something disturbing if you choose the immoral option.
Right. And so, I mean, and you have to wonder, you know, like you said, Johnny, these, you know, T-rated war games, are they really cheapening the
history,
the memory of the veterans that they're based on?
Yeah. I think in some ways they're disrespectful to the people who are actually in these wars, not to mention the victims. All the people who died, they're kind of reducing their deaths to, like I said, a guy falls over, there's no blood, and then he just disappears.
I think what it is that in the American subconscious, World War II is, quote-unquote, a long time ago.
And plus, in World War II, we were like, you know, everyone has, we were, you know, a lot of people have the opinion that we were the heroes. We saved World War II.
Right.
You know, America, fuck yeah.
Basically, yeah. No, basically, that's true. And I think that's why we don't see games set in, like, you know, Iraq.
Or Vietnam. I mean, there were a couple Vietnam games, but whenever one comes out, whenever any of them come out, there's always, like, a huge to-do about it. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, like there's, in, you know, in the American subconscious, that those conflicts are still very much fresh. And we still know that, like, the scars from that, from those wars, are still very much on our skin.
And in some cases, it's still bleeding, you know?
Yeah.
I understand why it's easier to make World War II into a cartoon than it is Vietnam. I just don't think it's more ethical to do so.
Oh, no, definitely not. It's definitely not. But I think it's easier
to get away with.
It's easier for the average person to let go.
Yeah, it's easier to get away with because, one, we won World War II.
Right.
And two, pretty much everyone can agree that the Nazis were a bad group of people.
Right.
I wouldn't...
Yeah, but even saying that the Allied forces were the good guys... It's really a lot more complicated than that. Even then, the Allied forces did things that were bad, and especially on a local level, when it comes down to shooting this guy or not shooting this guy, or how do I kill this guy, or should I capture him, it's a lot more complicated than that. And none of these things are ever addressed. And actually, the other element of this, and the reason I think it's really hypocritical the way these games are handled by the developers is that if you go to, if you look at a game like Call of Duty, the way that it is presented by the publisher and the guys who are actually developing the game is that it is the most authentic World War II game ever.
Yeah,
they go to painstaking steps to get, they record actual sounds on the range of the actual guns that were used in that period.
And they find
they bring in consultants who actually were veterans of the war.
They find, like, go back and they find blueprints of actual buildings that were, you know, like battlegrounds in World War II, and they recreate the building brick for brick, and, you know, they try and make it extremely authentic.
Yeah, I mean, they're bringing in veterans to be consultants. They're recreating specific battles in which thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people died.
Yeah, I mean, D-Day, and you know, Omaha Beach.
They're so authentic about all this stuff, but then the fundamentals of war, is it right, is it wrong, why am I doing this? Those things are completely left out. In other words, it couldn't be a less authentic experience. They're being authentic about all the wrong things.
The technical
That's what
aspect
I'm saying. Yes, right. They're very, very technically accurate, but they don't actually, they're not authentic at all about what war really is and what it's about and what it's like. And then at the same time, you got to figure when you take it to that level, if you have like an AO rated World War II game that's actually realistic and you have to deal with these moral choices and it's, the violence is real and the bloodshed is real. At that point, is it a game anymore? I mean, does anybody want to play that? Then you get into the question of, should we be making a game of this at all? Should we be concerned about
this? Should we be making a movie of it? I mean, you know, it's just
fun.
If anything, I think a properly done war video game that does all of those things that you mentioned, Johnny, would in many ways be an even more accurate depiction of the war is hell situation that a movie like Saving Private Ryan puts you in.
Because it's interactive. It would end up, in other words, I'm talking about turning war games from shooters, mindless shooters, into survival horror games. Because that's what war is. Survival horror. That's what it is. There's crazy, scary stuff going around you. And all you care about is basically surviving and maybe achieving some very basic goal of get from here to here. And that's what survival horror games actually do better than the war games.
But the question is, do we actually expect to see something like this anytime soon?
No, because people are cowards.
It's not marketable.
It's not marketable.
Yeah. And especially if, you know, Johnny said if it's rated AO, it's patently not marketable because no one will put it out on their console, apparently.
Right.
Right.
What I'm saying is, if you did it the way it should be done, then it probably wouldn't be fun and probably nobody would play it or sell it. But if you're not going to do it the way it should be done, you shouldn't do it at all. In other words, what I'm saying is the way these games are currently being developed and presented is really, I think, completely immoral, the way that these things are presented in such a cartoonish manner. And I'm talking about only the ones that are based on real conflicts here.
Yeah, right. If you want to make up a war,
go ahead. Do what you want. Yeah, laser grenades. I don't care.
The thing is that it's kind of weird is that when you see the commercials for, you know, Call of Duty's Call of Duty 4 and, you know, especially like the Medal of Honor games, you see the commercials and they're like super dramatic. It's almost like Michael Bay shot them, really.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the Medal of Honor Airborne commercial has been airing a lot right now because it's about to come out. And, you know, it's a shot of like a war-torn city and paratroopers dropping in. And it's like, you could go anywhere because you're a paratrooper and you could be dropped into hell anywhere on Earth. But, you know, when you get there, you're still shooting guys and they're still falling over and disappearing without any blood.
And it's like, you know, we lost a lot of good men that day. It was, you know, the worst day of my life, blah, 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 blah. And they kind of deliver you the promise of this gritty war experience, and then they just give you the standard fare.
They give you a James Bond video game.
Yeah.
Except without all the cool gadgets and smarminess.
Exactly. Okay, you guys know the controversy surrounding this Flash game that some guy made at the Independent Developers Conference called Super Columbine Massacre RPG.
Yeah.
Okay, how are any of these... all right, let's say from a Vietnam game, and there have been games released based on the war in Vietnam. How is that any different from a Vietnamese person's point of view than Super Columbine Massacre RPG?
Or even, you know, from an American's point of view regarding Vietnam, you know.
Yeah, maybe even then, exactly. You're dealing with actual events in which people really died, and you're reducing them to a cartoon. And yet, that game was completely lambasted from every single side.
And he actually
and
did
yet these games about World War II and Vietnam come out, and nobody says so much as a word about them.
Because, you know, I think the part of that has to do is that Hollywood has fully embraced World War II. Even if, you know, most of the movies epitomize the war is hell theme, you know, there's still big budget movies. You know, Saving Private Ryan still made a ton of money, and, you know, that's what we see. So if Hollywood is doing it, it's sort of already okay for video games to do it.
Yeah, but artistically, the way film handles no one's arguing so totally different. Yeah, but
problem is that people just don't care about video games. Like,
yeah, I know.
You know, and if you saw that sort of trivial approach to war in a movie, people would freak out.
But here's the thing, people do care in video games. They care about violence and how video games are shaping our children's minds. And yet they always focus on these fictional things like Doom and Quake, which aren't going to – those things aren't going to mess with anybody because you can clearly tell that these things are fictional. I think the true damage of video games on messing up with people's minds is in basically unflavoring these actual events like World War II and making people think that when you take a realistic gun and shoot a realistic person in this game, nothing of consequence really happens, and it's fun to do. That's what guys like Jack Thompson are missing, is that these games that don't treat war with the respect that it deserves and treat it in a realistic fashion, that's the kind of stuff that's screwing with people's minds.
Yeah, it's much more desensitizing.
Desensitizing you to reality. Games like Quake and Doom are not, because they're not reality in the first place. There's nothing to desensitize
you
to.
Or even Grand Theft Auto. You know, there's blood exactly. in Grand Theft Auto.
It's a cartoon.
Grand Theft Auto is very much a cartoon, because, I mean, no one can walk around carrying 30 guns without a backpack.
Exactly. It's a cartoon.
Yeah. But I think there's just kind of like, you know, in American culture, we quote-unquote like to blow shit up. Yep. And, you know, war is a good excuse to do that. I remember listening to a podcast.
Bay, Pearl Harbor, hello.
Yeah, seriously. And, like, I remember listening to a podcast and the guy
No, no, wait, that's a very good example. Pearl Harbor is a movie that sort of gets away with that, trivializing war by making it more, you know, romantic and less realistic.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, and I don't plan to.
Well,
it's
bad, don't say it. Anyway, but what I was going to say was, I was listening to a podcast recently, and there was a guy talking about how this was just after 9/11, and, you know, he had some friends who were in the Marines, and they had just come back. They were just, you know, off duty, I guess. They had some time to themselves. And they asked him, you're like, oh, you know video games. Where are some games where I just get to shoot terrorists? And I think that's something that a lot of people just like, oh, we just want to shoot the bad guys. They don't want the intellectual content.
Right.
And I think that's the main reason why you don't see something like that in video games.
Well, yeah, I remember, like, sometime right around after 9/11, there was, like, some silly, like, you know, there's, like, a million silly flash games where you'd bop Osama bin Laden on the head or you'd shoot him in the face or something, you know.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, that's all they wanted, just that release at that time.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a very tricky subject and not something that's easy to pin down at all. And, like you guys said, I don't honestly see a real representation of what war is in video games in the near future, but I would hope that as the industry matures and gains credit as an artistic form, that someone will take up the task one day.
Maybe Spielberg will do it.
That would be nice.
Yeah, really. Instead, he's making Jenga.
Yeah.
But I mean, he would definitely be the kind of person who has the credibility to bring something like that to video games, because he's already got that on his resume.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think he wants to, because I think Spielberg is smart enough to not attempt to make World War II fun.
Spielberg is very much in Miyamoto's position where he wants to make games that his kids can play.
Yes.
Probably. Well, I actually believe that ends our show for this episode, guys. Great discussion. Remember, guys, if you want to send us listener mail, that's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And we need a password for Mike's crazy mailbag.
Oh, God, we do.
Let's see. What could we ask?
It's Go Knowles.
Go Knowles, baby.
I really hope the Gator fan gets the first word in.
There you go. Grief. Go Knowles, baby.
Beat Colorado.
Woo! That shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah, well, we do have to play a mile high, so.
Yeah. Well, okay. And remember, if you want to dig the podcast, you can do so by going to the site. Just clicking on that little link. We're available on iTunes, where you can subscribe and leave a review for yourself. I've been noticing some of you have been leaving reviews lately, which I am very appreciative of. Thanks again to everybody who showed up for this episode. Johnny, thanks for showing up.
Oh, you're most welcome.
And Mike, thanks for coming back.
Oh, yeah. I'm always glad to be here.
And this has been your host, Carl Castagnetti. Listen to Radio Free Nintendo. See you next time, folks. Sayonara.
Bye-bye.